Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, there may be a few icky things in the piece that we're just going to do now, so just be ready for that. Of course, that'll make most people kind of put their ears even closer to the radio. It's kind of about doctors and stuff. Adam Kay is a writer and comedian, but in a previous life, he was a doctor. For much of that time, he kept a diary of the daily tragedies, miracles and comedies he witnessed. Now he's turned it into a book called This Is Going to Hurt, The Secret Diaries of a Junior Doctor. Afternoon, Adam.
Afternoon.
To start at the end, why did you stop being a doctor?
I stopped being a doctor because I had a very bad day at work. We all have bad days at work. Obviously, you're having one now. But when the stakes are so high in medicine that bad days are really, really terrible, and that's not something you actually prepare for, you know, when you're 18 and you're, you know, applying to medical school, or earlier when you're choosing the, you know, the subjects to get you into medical school. And so, ultimately, I didn't have the emotional exoskeleton, I guess, to deal with the bad stuff.
Because bad stuff means death or a lifetime of suffering for somebody, or those
kinds of
things. It does,
and I worked on labour wards. I was an obstetrician, and I was fairly senior. I was a year or two from being a consultant, and when the very worst stuff happens on labour ward, as you can imagine, is terrible. The flip side of how rewarding and wonderful the job is when, you know, you end up with twice the number of patients you start with, which is a great batting average for any branch of medicine. But when it goes wrong, that's the flip side, is the depth of the lows.
And during your entire career as a doctor, while you were a junior doctor and everything in between, on those bad days, or when you saw terrible human suffering, or when you saw just people being stupidly self-destructive, how did you when you went home, how did you deal with that?
A couple of things. The main thing I did was not talk about it, which I think is a common thread amongst doctors. You know, you get home and you're asked how your day was. You're like, fine. And then you don't want to, you know, you just sort of do. And which you can do. Everyone's got a certain emotional buffer zone, I guess, that can cope with that. The other thing I did, and I'm glad I did in retrospect, was I wrote a lot of stuff down. So I kept diaries all the time. So I guess looking for the glimmers of light amongst the dark. So, you know, if you go to your hospital on call room afterwards and write down, you know, all the things patients did, all the objects and orifices that you can discuss your friends with at dinner parties later on, that, you know, that sort of finding the light helped with the dark.
Yeah. Now, and when you were a junior doctor, and it seems like you were in A&E quite a bit, so you would have seen people coming in who, A, were the worst for wear from alcohol, or had done stupendously stupid things when they were drunk. Could you tell us about the chap who slid down the pole and there was degloving? You better explain what degloving is.
Yes, OK. So this is from my earliest days, and this is an A&E incident. So degloving, typically if motorcyclists fly off their bikes in an accident and their hands drag along the ground, and the skin and tissues come off the hand, that's known as degloving. This is a gentleman, he was 18 years old, he was out celebrating with friends and found himself at the end of the night dancing on the roof of a bus shelter, then decided to get back to ground level using a neighbouring lamppost as a fireman's pole, and he slid down koala bear style, I guess, but had misjudged the texture of the lamppost. And this resulted in severe grazing to both hands and a complete degloving of his penis.
And you can't re-glove it because what was there is all over the lamppost.
Yeah, the glove was spread quite evenly up 8 foot of lamppost.
Does that grow back ever, or?
No, things don't tend to grow back, really. You know, something will have been constructed, but it won't work as for all the functions that one might hope it would. I mean, this sort of, there'll be a, you know, like a box of wine with a sort of, that sort of tap at the end, there'll be a little catheter with one of those. No, we're talking about having bad days. That was a really bad day for that 18-year-old.
Because from those early days, a lot of the stories kind of are connected with alcohol. And I suppose if you're under tremendous stress, a lot of people might go home and have a drink. But did you do that, given what you were seeing people were doing to themselves on the basis of drink?
I didn't manage to get a sort of an amazing alcohol problem as, you know, like the TV doctors doing all the dramas, mainly because when I got home after 16 hours on a labour ward, I was too tired to do anything other than just sleep.
Yes.
It was after a couple of years of working in more general specialties, I was on labour ward where happily patients tend to be reasonably sober.
Now, and you did kind of slightly allude to this before, and we're in the same area of the body. Tell us the story about the woman who had a special plan for an engagement.
Oh, yes. This was lovely. So it was the 29th of February 2008, so it was a leap year. And special occasions, I found, as a doctor, inspire the public to insert special types of objects in places. For example, at various Christmases over the years, I've had a stuck fairy, I've had a mistletoe contact allergy causing a swollen vulva. I'd even had vaginal burns from a patient putting a string of lights inside and turning them on, bringing new meaning to the phrase, I put the Christmas lights up myself. And anyway, this was a leap year, and you would wonder how that could result in a gynecology admission. However, this patient decided she wanted to take advantage of tradition and propose to her boyfriend, and she went to the expense of buying an engagement ring, the trouble of putting it inside a Kinder Surprise egg, and the imagination of inserting it vaginally.
Mm.
And the plan would be that her partner would discover it, retrieve it, and then she would propose, which is, I guess, equal parts unexpected, revolting, and maybe romantic. So anyway, this happened, but unfortunately, it had rotated itself lengthwise somehow, and no amount of sugarling from either of them would get the particular goose to lay its golden egg. And so they presented to A&E, which is where I met them, and extraordinarily, she hadn't told either him or me what she'd done or why. So I retrieved it fairly easily with a pair of forceps, and so it was very surprising for both of us when she asked him to open it. So I gave him a pair of latex gloves, which sandblasted the last trace of romance from the scenario, and she popped the question, and he said yes, presumably out of fear as to what a woman who does that with a Kinder Surprise would do to him if spurned.
Yeah, that's a hell of a speech for their wedding day.
Yes, although who knows where the best man will have kept the wedding ring.
Yes. Ah, latex gloves, anyone. There are very funny stories in your book. There are tragic parts in the book. And I suppose, is it predicated by a sense that you and your colleagues were all doing this kind of thing over very long shifts, and people don't really quite appreciate how difficult and how grueling it is?
I think that's exactly right. That's the very reason that I decided these diaries should get a wider audience, because if you're not in the profession, you don't realise quite what a toll the job can take, quite what it involves, the ins and outs of it. And there are the funny stuff, things happening, but there's also the sad stuff, and there's the high-octane stuff, and there's the mundane stuff. And I think the diaries present a fair mix of it, because down in England, when the junior doctors were coming under fire from the government were saying that doctors were being greedy, and that's why they were striking. As someone who had done the job, that was like a dagger through my heart every time it happened. And the doctors never got their side of the story across because, you know, they're doing a 16-hour shift in hospitals being doctors. So I thought if people knew the toll it takes on their life, it would be very difficult for them to believe that a doctor was being greedy, because it destroys your relationships, it destroys friendships. You're routinely, you know, cancelling on people because, you know, you're leaving work 3 hours late. If someone starts bleeding out on you and it's 5 p.m. and you're meant to be going home, going out to the pub, you don't have a choice whether you stay or go. You technically have a choice, but if that's a choice to you, you'd have never gone to medical school in the first place. So you stay and you sort it out. And that happens so routinely that people stop inviting you out to things. They just assume that you're going to end up not making it or cancelling it. I know people who've cancelled their own stag do's, people who've moved their 30th birthday party. I've got a friend on the morning of her own wedding had to go to antenatal clinic to see patients dressed in the sort of full wedding hair and makeup because that was the only way she could get it to work. These are not greedy people. So it's a predominantly funny book because most of the stuff I wrote down was funny and a lot of funny stuff happens, but it is also sad.
The book is called This Is Going to Hurt, Secret Diaries of a Junior Doctor, Adam Kay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.